Again, thank you for coming out on a kind of a rainy, stormy day. It's been kind of the weather pattern we've been in, but good news, tomorrow, Monday, it will be sunny. And I don't know if you where you were on Friday night, but Friday night got really rainy and stormy and lightning and thunder, and pretty strong little storm that swept through here. We see storms that are sweeping across the southern states right now, and from Texas all the way across to Florida. Now, so we're in that early spring stormy time of the year. And I was just thinking, the storm Friday night made me think about the story of a young mom who is putting her little boy to bed, and it's a stormy night out. It's lightning. It's thunder. The wind is blowing so hard outside his window. He can just see the trees shaking back and forth. The rain is hitting the windowsill so hard. It sounds like small pebbles hitting it. The house is doing that whistle every now and then as the wind shifts around it. And the little boy's sitting there, and the mom's getting them all tucked in, and he's afraid. And he looks up at her and goes, Mom, it's kind of scary outside, isn't it? She goes, yes, but you're safe inside. Well, he says, I don't feel so safe inside. She says, but you are. You're in your warm home. You're in your bed. You're really good. And he says, Mom, yes, son. Do you think you could just spend the night with me tonight in my room? And she goes, oh, son, I have to go back and be with your dad. You're a brave boy. You'll be okay. I'm going to be with Daddy tonight. And the boy goes, that big sissy. moms have to constantly negotiate things. And today we're going to be talking about the strength not of just moms, but of women, because really moms get their strength from just them being a woman and in the world. And I was watching, I think it was yesterday, I was watching about these different memorials and statues and all the things that they have created. And one of the statues that they were talking about was the Statue of Liberty. And I was thinking about this, and every time I've seen a statue that depicted liberty, freedom, it's always been of women. Isn't that interesting? And actually, when you think about the law, what's pictured? A woman. And when you talk about wisdom, and even in the Bible, wisdom is portrayed as a woman calling out. And I think sometimes we just forget that just how strong women are. We usually think of the brute strength of men, but there is an inner quality that women have that just shows up at remarkable times. And so we're going to be looking at this one woman that we don't know a whole lot about in the Old Testament, but she really demonstrated some major strength in just a little bit that we do know about her. And her name is Hannah, and you'll find her in 1 Samuel chapter 1. And one of the things that we're going to look at Hannah's life is just how she was able to demonstrate this kind of strength that she had during her own personal anguish. And we're going to be reading about what that personal anguish is in the scripture. But she was married to a man. He had another wife. And Hannah didn't have children, but the other wife did. And we're going to see how that kind of played out in her whole role. But we'll also see other characters that move into her life that help us understand how she was strong. Because actually, she demonstrates such strength because of the insensitivity of others. And really, people that are around us, sometimes they either do things on purpose or they do things accidentally. Or they do things just not thinking that actually cause harm. And we don't pay much attention to that except for, when it's not happening to us, but for others that they struggle with that. And especially when there's somebody who's deliberately being cruel. And we're going to see in Hannah's life that she was really dealing for a long time with her rival, and it shouldn't have been a rival, but it was her rival scoffing as her husband's other wife. So if you have your Bibles, open up to 1 Samuel chapter 1, and it says this. There was a certain man of Ramathaim Zophim, of the hill country of Ephraim, whose name was Elkanah, the son of Jeroham, son of Elihu, son of Tohu, son of Zuf, an Ephraite. He had two wives, which was the custom back then, that a lot of men, especially if you were wealthy, you had two wives or more. The name of one was Hannah, and the name of the other is Peninnah. So now we know there's two women. Hannah's mentioned first because she's kind of the center of the story, but also she's first in his affection. And then you have Peninnah. And Peninnah had children, but Hannah had no children. So now this is setting the stage of what's happening here. Peninnah, though she isn't the favorite of the husband, was the one that was giving him children. Hannah, who is the favorite, wasn't. And in that time, in that place, a woman who did not give children often was considered that it was because of her own sinfulness. And so people would wonder, well, what did you do? What did she commit? You know, what sins have she committed? Because it clearly must be God's judgment. Now, this man used to go up year by year from a city to worship and to sacrifice to the Lord of hosts at Shiloh, where the two sons of Eli, Hophni and Phinehas, were priests of the Lord. On the day when Elkanah sacrificed, he would give portions to Peninnah, his wife, and to all of her sons and daughters. But to Hannah, he gave a double portion because he loved her, though the Lord had closed her womb. So clearly, there's even an outward display of favoritism by Elkanah to Hannah. So he's already creating this tension. There's already tension in the air. Now he's just adding to this tension. And her rival, verse 6, used to provoke her grievously to irritate her because the Lord had closed her womb. So her rival knew what buttons to push, knew exactly how to annoy her. You know, she was jealous of the relationship she had with their husband. And she knew that not having children was really difficult for her, so she would provoke her about that. You know, there's a group of us that are going through the book called EQ Applied. It's an emotional quotient. It's about being able, recognizing that maybe you can't control your emotions all the time, but you can control your responses. And in that book, it talks about Steve Jobs. Now, Steve Jobs was brilliant. I mean, he founder of Apple, founder, one of the co-founders of Pixar Pictures. And people gravitated to be around him. They wanted to be around him because he would bring out the best in you. However, sometimes that brought out the worst in him. And so a lot of people thought that he was kind of emotionally immature, but actually he was actually crafty in his emotions because not only did he know how to get the most out of you, but then he enjoyed putting you down and hurting you emotionally. You know, there's just this thing that he could do. He knew exactly what to say to kind of devastate you and then turn it around and use it for himself. And, you know, there's people that we get around that they seem to know exactly what to say or do that annoy us. And they kind of push those buttons. And that was Peninnah. And it went on year by year. So it's just not the one trip. It's every time they get in the station wagon together. It's just this terrible time. Every opportunity to go down to worship was a torment for Hannah. As often as she went up to the house of the Lord, she used to provoke her. Therefore, Hannah wept and could not eat. So she was just overwhelmed with grief. And then verse 8. And when we read this, you're going to think, what was he thinking? And Elkanah, her husband, said to her, Hannah, why do you weep? And why do you not eat? And why is your heart sad? Okay, he knows the reasons. And then he says, am I not more to you than 10 sons? Really? Do you want me to answer that question? That's what you're asking me? Do you know what that is? That is a typical male response, that we have to fix something. You know, if there's a loose hinge, you tighten the screws. If the car needs working one, if you can't do it, you take it someplace. You just fix things. Oh, I know how to fix things. Hey, I know you want a son, but hey, ain't isn't my love worth 10 of those? And survey says, right? So basically, her strength is also demonstrated in her husband's fixing it. Because she doesn't really retaliate. She doesn't say anything to him. She doesn't go, really? Yeah, you've never understood my feelings. Then verse 9, after they had eaten and drunk in Shiloh, Hannah rose. Now Eli the priest was sitting on the seat beside the doorpost of the temple of the Lord. She was deeply distressed and prayed to the Lord and wept bitterly. And she vowed a vow and said, O Lord of hosts, if you will indeed look at the affliction of your servant and remember me and not forget your servant, but will give to your servant a son, then I will give him to the Lord all the days of his life. And no razor shall touch his head. So she went to the place that she knew would be safe, and that's the temple. She went to church, a safe place. She went to pray. She's got Peniah who's aggravating her with, you know, tormenting her, pushing all those buttons. She's got her husband really who's kind of not really following through with what he's saying. So she went someplace where she can find comfort, where she can find peace, where she could go in safety. And as she continued praying before the Lord, Eli observed her mouth. Hannah was speaking in her heart. Only her lips moved, and her voice was not heard. Therefore, Eli took her to be a drunken woman. Yep, safety gone. And Eli said to her, how long will you go on being drunk? Put away your wine. Put your wine away from you. Okay. Here she is distraught. She goes to the church where she should be safe, and now she's accused of public drunkenness in the house of worship. How is that for safety? How is that for being judged unfairly? Of course, that never happens in churches today. So here she comes, and she comes in, and he's accusing her. And one of the things that we see just in this is that she recognizes what is and what is not in her control. She responds to this clueless statement. You know, she has to endure this guy publicly saying things about her. And in that, she recognizes two things. One, in all of this, she recognizes two things. She recognizes what is and what is not within her control. So first of all, she has this deliberate prayer. She is deliberately praying something to the Lord and saying, if you give me a son, I'm going to give him back all the days of his life. He's going to be committed to you. She's basically making what they called in the Old Testament a Nazarite vow that no razor will touch his head. His hair will grow out because he is going to be demonstrated as an outward sign that he is dedicated to the Lord. So she's going to the Lord in prayer because she has no place else to go. There's nothing within her that she can do. But the second thing is, we see this, but the second thing, watch what she does then. Not only does she pray, but look at this. But Hannah answered, no, my Lord, I am a woman troubled in spirit. I have drunk neither wine nor strong drink, but I have been pouring out my soul before the Lord. Do not regard your servant as a worthless woman, for all along I have been speaking out of my great anxiety and vexation. So first she has this deliberate prayer, but she also now defends herself. She has a respectful defense, and you see, she's just not going to let this lay. He's accusing her of something that is not right, and she doesn't just take it. She responds to him, and she responds to him in a respectful way to correct what he said. And as individuals, that's important for us to understand. There are times that things are being said about us or about somebody else, and we need to correct that and not just let it lay. But it needs to be done with respect, not with glee. Because people are always coming up with things that are just not true. When I was 14, 15 years old, I was working around the house. I don't exactly remember what I did, but all I remember was I hurt my back and I went right down, and I could not walk. It hurt so bad. And so I went to, back then it was called Kafritz Hospital. It was just inside D.C., outside of Prince George's County. It's had several names since then. I think it's now the combined hospital of something. Anyway, they... So I went there, and they were running some tests, and I remember being on a gurney out in the hallway. Okay, my back is killing me, and I'm laying on this gurney, and, you know, not really comfortable. And I'm sitting there, and I'm kind of nudging around, you know, trying to find a comfortable place. And every time I move, I would hurt. So, and there is these two women. One was a mom, probably in her 60s, 70s, and the daughter, 30s, 40s. And they were talking, and I could catch just little things about, well, what do you think is going on with him, you know? So they're talking about me, and I'm looking over at them, and they're talking, they're pointing, they're talking. We're just in the hallway. They're for a test. I'm there for a test. Finally, the younger one gets up and walks over to me, and she goes, "Excuse me, are you a drug addict?" As that 14, 15-year-old, I looked up at her and said, "Please go away." And no, I'm not a drug addict. And then I reported her to the nurse. You know, people are always thinking the worst. And the strength that we find in Hannah was she corrected it. And she did it with deliberateness. And here's the response. Then Eli answered, "Go in peace, and the God of Israel grant your petition that you have made to him." And she said, "Let your servant find favor in your eyes." And the woman went her way and ate, and her face was no longer sad. So the thing here isn't that her prayer has been answered yet. It has been answered. And we'll see that she did have a son. But she did find contentment. She did find peace. And, you know, we need to be careful because there's, you know, to go back to the clueless statements just a little bit, you know, it's easy for us to make these clueless statements. You know, sometimes I've been around people that a couple hasn't had children. Sometimes it's by choice. Sometimes it's not by choice. And people go, "So what's the deal? Why didn't you have any children?" Really? Is that any of your business? Why are you asking that? You shouldn't be asking that question. You know, that cuts to the quick. But even in all of that, the strength of a woman often can help them find contentment. Doesn't mean that the contentment stays there day in and day out. Sometimes it drifts in and drifts out. But there becomes eventually over time a trust in the Lord. Then the passage continues. They rose early in the morning and worshiped before the Lord. Then they went back to their house at Ramah, and Elkanah knew Hannah, his wife, and the Lord remembered her. And in due time, Hannah conceived and bore a son. And she called his name Samuel, for she said, "I have asked for him from the Lord." Then the man Elkanah and all of his house went up to offer the Lord and the yearly sacrifice to pay his vow. But Hannah did not go up, for she said to her husband, "As soon as the child is weaned, I will bring him, so that he may appear in the presence of the Lord and dwell there forever." Elkanah, her husband, said to her, "Do what seems best to you. Wait until you have weaned him. Only may the Lord establish his word." So the woman remained and nursed her son until she weaned him. You know, what's really amazing here is his whole pattern has been the whole family goes and worships. But here she says, you know, I can't do that because I made a commitment, and when he goes, he's going to stay. And he was okay with that. And the strength of a woman actually encourages the respect of others. When they are demonstrating this amazing strength, there is this respect that comes. And Elkanah certainly had respect for his wife because he said, "All right, that is fine." And as individuals, we should find that respect and pay that respect to those women in our lives that have demonstrated such strength. And then it continues on. And when she had weaned him, she took him with her, along with a 3-year-old bull and the ephah of flour and a skin of wine, and she brought him to the house of the Lord at Shiloh.
and the child was young. And they slaughtered the bull, and they brought the child to Eli. He said, "Oh, my Lord." And she said, "Oh, my Lord, as you live, my Lord, I am the woman who is standing here in your presence praying to the Lord. For this child that I prayed, and the Lord has granted me my petition that I made to him." So the other thing is that the strength is demonstrated here in that she's fulfilling her commitment. You know, she made, really in her prayer desperation, she made a commitment to God. And when he granted it, she didn't forget it like so many people do. She actually remembered it and she was fulfilling that commitment. You know, oftentimes we even movies make fun of people that in the midst of things they make it, you know, when a life or death situation, you know, they'll pray things like, "God, I'll memorize the whole Ten Commandments if you get me out of this." And then afterwards they're like, "You know, there's tens a whole lot, Lord. I don't know that. Maybe I can memorize a couple of the big ones." And you know, and I said I would go to church every day, but you know, that's a lot. Every Sunday, can I just come like Christmas and Easter? You know, so they start backtracking, but not her. She didn't backtrack. And it continues on in verse 28. "Therefore I have lent him to the Lord as long as he lives. He has lent to the Lord," and he worshiped the Lord there. So here she is. She's weaned him. It's just a little child, and she's leaving him. So not only did she fulfill her commitment, but her strength was that she could let him go, that she could walk away. How amazing is that? So she's actually going to walk away from that little boy. Now, to us, that seems really difficult. And even then, he was younger than normally when you would do that. If you ever have a chance to go to St. Mary's City down in southern Maryland, it's a nice little thing. It's like a Williamsburg in a real small or miniature version. And the characters there are amazing because the people playing the characters never, ever step out of character. And down there, there's the replica of the dove. The Ark and the Dove came, brought the first settlers to Maryland. And the dove is a very small sailing vessel. And when we were on board, and this was years ago, and our oldest was 12, the crewman said, "Well, how old is he?" I said, "Well, he's 12. "Well, he's perfect age to be apprenticed to the boat." And back then, people used to put their children on these sailing vessels at 12 and send them to sea so that they could get a great life, a good life. During the War of the Rebellion, Julia Dent Grant, see, you thought I wouldn't get through this. Julia Dent Grant, the wife of Ulysses S. Grant, their son was 12 years old. And when the war broke out and Ulysses was an officer, now a general, and was going down into Missouri and that area to fight Arkansas, she sent the 12-year-old son with him. Because she knew that he needed family to be around to be supportive of him. So the 12-year-old boy went with General Grant. And the 12-year-old boy, being kind of a 12-year-old boy and out there doing things, would get on a horse and go find things. He found a group of Confederate soldiers in a house one time so that he could tell the Union people where they were. He would go up and down. He would go into the battlefields and ride around with the officers. And this one colonel was put in charge of watching over him, and as they're riding around in the battle, bullets flying all around, young Fred Grant got hit and went down. The colonel jumped down and went over to him, and the boy says, "I've been shot dead." And the colonel starting to look, and it was just a minor wound of the leg, and he was like, "Oh, phew," because he figured he would be dead if something happened to him. So Ulysses S. Grant said, "Okay, it's way too dangerous here for this young man to be here." So he sent him back to Julia. And she sent him back to Ulysses because she knew he needed him and the boy needed to be around him. So this 12-year-old, 13-year-old, 14-year-old boy saw Civil War from the battlefields. Isn't that amazing? We don't understand that letting go. I mean, some parents won't let go of their children when they're 30 or 40, much less 12. But there is a strength in women that are able to let go of things, let go of individuals, let go of people, and allow them to to make it on in their lives. And then we see in chapter 2, verses 18 through 20, Samuel was ministering before the Lord, a boy clothed with a linen ephod. So he's kind of dressed up like a priest. You know, he's helping the priest. He's kind of dressed up as a miniature priest. And his mother used to make for him a little robe and take it to him each year when she went up to with her husband to offer the yearly sacrifice. So basically, we see the strength of women. They actually help people support, they help their children in their service. They support their children to serve the Lord. They help others to serve the Lord. That's their strength, that they want to see their very best in serving Christ and deepen their relationship with him. Then Eli would bless Elkanah and his wife and say, "May the Lord give you children by this woman for the petition she asked of the Lord." So then they would return to their home. And so what we see there is later on in the passage, we see that they did have more children. But when we come in, we look at this passage of Scripture, and we see the strength of Hannah. And one of the things that we just want to recognize is that we want her example and the example of all the strength of the women even here today to be an inspiration to us for greater commitment and to service to the Lord. That we want to be able to recognize, not just today on Mother's Day, just how strong women are, but to recognize it all the time, every single day. And that we recognize that, you know, all of us collectively, men and women, that we have become better because of the women that God has placed in our lives to encourage us and to help us. And to be really honest, even the ones who might be more like Peniah, if we respond in a correct way, that those women, those even men who behave like that too, those people can strengthen us. Hannah was strong because every time she met something that was difficult for her, she kept coming back to the two things. One, recognize what she couldn't control, and two, handle the things that she could.